אתם עם SBS בעברית. You are with Shalom Australia.
Jody, welcome to SBS Hebrew.
Thanks for having me.
Can you tell us how you got started at the Melbourne Art Fair? I know you've been in the arts for a while, but tell us the whole genesis of that.
When I was finishing school, thinking about what to do at uni, I went on a trip to Venice, to the Venice Biennale, and I was lucky enough to visit the Peggy Guggenheim Museum. If you've been there, if you haven't been there, it's Peggy's personal home on the canal, which is now a public museum, but it houses her private collection. And it's really amazing. And that was really the first time I saw all these interns there wandering around the museum and talking to everybody. And that was really the first time I kind of realized that having a job in the arts was a real possibility. I came from a line of not arts workers, so it was not really in my realm of possibility or even in my frame of mind at the time. So I went to uni and I studied arts with arts history. I loved learning about art history, all the different periods and styles, and that kind of took me down that journey. Then throughout uni, I did a lot of internships at different auction houses and galleries, biennales. I went interstate and I went international. And then I got a job at a commercial art gallery. I worked there for a few years and got great experience with artists running a gallery, art fairs, just really threw myself into it that way. Then I worked at an auction house, which was another entirely different aspect of the industry. And then I was thinking about my next move, and I thought there's another aspect of the arts that I really wanted to dig my feet into, and that was art fairs. So I approached Melbourne Art Fair, and I was quite persistent with talking to the CEO at the time to give me a job, and had an interview with her and kind of started pretty much straight away.
Could you give us some insights into the selection process for galleries participating at the Melbourne Art Fair
and considered exhibition program throughout the year that can be virtually or brick and mortar store, or they can participating in art fairs or doing project-based work throughout the year? They apply with an artist or a number of artists. They put forward a presentation that's examined by an external selection committee that's appointed each year. And that selection committee can be a variety of people within the arts or arts adjacent kind of world. The galleries that are eligible to apply kind of fall into that category. But after those few things, that the criteria that the selection committee look at, and then the galleries get notified in writing, and sometimes there's a bit of backwards and forwards, refining their presentation, refining their exhibition,
And do you find that the same galleries present every year? We should mention that the Melbourne Art Contemporary Fair happens in Melbourne summertime at the beginning of the year. I tend to go to it as often as I can. It's a lot of fun. It's a big, lavish kind of event, I would say, that spans over a couple of days. Would you see the same galleries presenting every year there, or is there a possibility that they fall out one year and they come back the next?
The bulk of galleries do repeat. There's a lot of value in maintaining a consistent presence in the market and in the fair. That brand recognition, really important aspect of it. There are galleries that come in and out of it based on a number of reasons. This year we saw a number of new emerging galleries, which was really great. So yeah, it's kind of a mix, but there is a strong presence of majority of the galleries each year.
How does Melbourne Art Fair level against the Sydney Contemporary Art Fair?
It's a common point of comparison between galleries and collectors. Melbourne Art Fair, they started in 1988, so it has a very rich history and presence and belonging in the Melbourne and Australian landscape. It was really one of the first fairs internationally to present contemporary art, so it was really a trailblazer at the time. It's gone through a few different iterations in terms of how it's been run and the leadership. And then once it was turned into a foundation, and currently it stands as a non-for-profit. So I guess that is one main difference between Sydney Contemporary and Melbourne Art Fair, whereby every decision that's made by the board and by the Melbourne Art Fair team. Everything is considered within the context of the foundation and the fact that it is non-for-profit. A large portion of our resources focus on our commissions program. We put a lot of money back into the arts ecosystem from the fair itself that sets Sydney Contemporary and Melbourne Art Fair apart.
How would you say Australia rates internationally against other countries with a contemporary art scene?
Australia is a much smaller landscape, smaller number of people, smaller pool of money in terms of bigger arts centres like New York or London or even a lot of the Asian cities. So it's a bit hard to compare the markets because there's such different factors involved. However, the contemporary art scene in Australia is thriving. There's a lot of great collectors, a lot of great institutions, a lot of great galleries. It's an exciting place to be part of the contemporary art scene.
Do you consider certain Australian artists to hold value in their particular art just because of who they are? Would you see their pieces as assets?
Definitely. Australian artists collected very, very avidly within Australia. Works are definitely sought after by collectors, by institutions, and often hard to come by. An artist in demand often has sell out shows before the show even opens. And some of those artists even are sought after internationally as well.
Okay, who are some of your favourite Australian artists?
I don't know if you can actually see behind me. There's an emerging artist, an emerging Indigenous artist. Her name's Simone Griffin. She's on a really great trajectory in her career. She's represented by a really great emerging up-and-coming gallery in Sydney. And she's actually just been picked up by one of the leading commercial galleries in Australia. So that's a really nice transition for her. Gregory Hodge is another favourite. He's not as emerging as Simone that I just said, but he has a really, really unique painterly style. Actually, just his exhibition had another sellout show and his style is evolving really, really nicely. He lives in Paris a lot of the time, so he's also got that international arm of his work, which is really exciting to see.
So just on that note, you know, when you say living in Paris, like at the turn of the century, when we had the Impressionist era and the Belle Époque era, even just before that, I mean, people joined different collectives or arts movements. Does that still exist today, this concentric circle of different people that paint in the same thematic ways?
So I don't think in that same traditional style. The way that artists make part of a studio, like an artist, they're called ARIs, and it's like a collection of studios in a building or in the same location, and they create unity that way, like a group of artist studios, or they have residency at, say, like Gertrude is a very known one, Gertrude Contemporary. That's where there's artists actually get awarded a studio residency for a year. Itself, Gertrude has a wonderful reputation of really growing artist careers and nurturing that. And so to be awarded a residency at a place, Gertrude would be a really big achievement for a young emerging artist at that point in their career.
Do they get funding? What's the process like? Do they get funding to get a residency there?
Look, everyone would run differently, but example, like for Gertrude Contemporary, they would be given a studio space.
Throughout the year, how do they sustain their living? I mean, in terms of they've got presumably these outlays if they don't have a residency or they're not funded or sponsored to go into a residency, how do they sustain a living? I mean, do they have to just wait for the art to sell? Is that how it works?
It's tricky for a lot of artists starting out and even throughout their career. That's the kind of the saying that struggling artists, it really is, if you're not selling your work, it's hard to make ends meet like that. A lot of artists would have a second job or they're doing it alongside something. The lucky ones are able to live off the sale of their art. That's definitely not the majority.
Tell us the role of the gallerist. How does it all work? Can an artist approach a gallery and then a gallery either accepts or declines the artist, and interstate, can they be represented by another gallery? Or is it exclusive to one gallery? How do these sort of things work?
It is gallery dependent, and each gallery has their own kind of set of rules. But typically how it would work, a gallery would approach an artist that they've seen or they've been watching for some time, and they'd develop a relationship. Most galleries would have a contract that details the terms of the relationship. Most galleries would probably request that they're the only gallery representation within that state. It's very common in Australia for artists to have multi-state representation. It sometimes can be a case-by-case basis.
But do galleries work as subsidiaries? They have different partners in different states, or is it all very individual?
Ideally, galleries are collaborative with each other, because the goal at the end of the day is to support the artist. It doesn't always work like that, but if an artist were to be represented by a gallery in Melbourne and by a gallery in Sydney, all the sales in Melbourne would be handled by the Melbourne gallery, and all the sales in Sydney would be handled by the Sydney gallery. Some galleries have a Melbourne and a Sydney gallery, so that could be the two states, or that can sometimes get in the way. It depends.
It would be quite awkward if someone saw something in a Melbourne gallery and then saw it again in Sydney, and that was the for them to buy in Sydney, and then, you know.
Exactly. But you know what? It does happen, and you'd hope that the collector and the gallerist are working with everyone's best interest at heart, and hopefully there's more goodwill than not.
Do you think Australian art is an asset? Like, could it be compared to other assets?
It's not a traditional asset like a property. When you own a property, there are very strict rules and regulations and processes and guidelines around how you buy or sell or what you do with it. In terms of art as an asset, people look at it in a few different ways. I guess you can buy art to just enjoy and see it on your wall. Also, some people buy art with the sole purpose of buying something for it to increase in value and then to ultimately sell it on the secondary market. So it absolutely can act as an asset, but not everyone treats it like that.
Recently at a Sotheby's auction in New York, a banana that was taped onto a wall, and a real banana that was bought earlier that day, in I think it was in Chinatown in New York, sold for over $6 million, US dollars. How do you explain that? How do you explain a phenomenon like that?
There's been lots and lots written about it. I think it can come down to a few simple things like supply and demand. Like, if somebody wants it, somebody's going to buy it. There's definitely a status associated with the publicity surrounding it. Like, I was able to spend $6 million on a literal banana. And, you know, some people see the value in that.
Well, apparently some cryptocurrency king did, because he bought it.
I don't know, a few years ago, there was not a banana, but another kind of very publicized art-related incident with a famous artist, Banksy, where his work was included in a very prestigious auction, and it was a framed work. And as the work was up for sale, that lot was up, just as the hammer went down, the work pretty much self-imploded. A shredder had been installed into the back of the frame. So essentially the person had paid a large amount of money for a shredded artwork. And there was a whole story and controversy around that. Was it intended? Was it accidental? But again, it's like, well, Banksy, his whole approach to art is kind of poking fun at it.
So what happened? Did he buy it?
Yeah, it was purchased. It was purchased and it was shredded.
There was also Salvador Mundi that was sold at Christie's in 2017 or 2018, I forget. It sold for $444 million. I mean, you talk about supply and demand. Obviously, the demand would be high, and this is one of one, but $444 million, I mean, it's unquantifiable. How do you actually put a price on art?
Often with paintings of that value, the person who acquires the works don't even have the paintings on view. I've heard that a lot of the time they actually buy the work, put it in a safe or in a vault. And then what they have on display is a fake of that work because it's so valuable they can't actually have it out in the open or don't want to have it out in the open. But how do you put a price on the works? Provenance is a really important aspect when estimating price. Provenance explains the history of a work. It's in
sample of the work.
Exactly. The exhibition history, who's bought it, where it's been. That's a really important aspect when determining the price of the work. And the price reflects the current market that it's in.
And it could be quite volatile as well. I mean, I remember I used to work at an auction house and we had an estimate on some Clarice Beckett pieces that were between $30,000 and $50,000 that sold for nearly $200,000 at Hammer before the buyer's premium was added to it as well. I mean, it's so hard to predict. As you know, drew the comparison to property before, there are certain metrics in place that makes it a more predictable market with all things considered in a safe economic climate. But this is never, I mean, this can be so volatile. This market.
But you know, all it takes, even at a property, all it takes is two people that want it and the estimate kind of gets forgotten. It's if you want it, you have the money to buy it, then that determines the price and the value of
that. That's true. But then does that equate the new price as the new estimate for that piece or was that just luck?
It's a good question. I think it depends. It depends what the other works in the market at the time by the artist, what they're doing, where they are, is there a repeat sale price in another auction? Trends also impact artists, like sale prices works, whether the artist is alive or not alive, if they're at the end of their career, how many more years do they have to paint works?
Yeah, what's the psychology behind that? Is that another supply demand sort of model? If it's a posthumously sold piece, or if it's someone that's nearing the end of their career and they're only making a few pieces left,
is that
tantalizing?
Yeah, usually that would demand a higher price because simply there's not going to be that many more works available or new works available.
And the role of a gallery, can they also inject a bit of a price inflation to the actual artist? Sort of depending on which galleries represent them?
For a commercial gallery, the price and the price increase are a really important component to the work because you don't want to get prices growing too quickly to lose the market, but you also don't want to devalue the works and the artist's career and their trajectory. So that is definitely why it's so important to associate yourself with a gallery of a good reputation and good experience because they know what they're doing. And then in terms of auction and price gouging, it's a topic that's often discussed and it's not looked upon favorably. It does happen, unfortunately. And again, that the conversation between the gallery and the auction house, you'd hope it would be collaborative and you'd hope that everyone would have the artist and the artistry in their best interest. It doesn't, unfortunately, always happen like that, particularly in Australia.
So you'd think of the artist as the artist and gallery as the manager, essentially, and yeah. They would.
And I guess also I should say Australia in relation to the rest of the world and the other contemporary hubs around the world, the Australian contemporary secondary market, it's still in its infancy. It hasn't really grown yet, not like New York or Paris or any other hub around the world. It's not there yet. We don't have the population or the money or the history yet to support thriving contemporary art.
הפכו את אתר sbs.com.au/Hebrew לאתר הבית שלכם. קבלו את הידיעות הטריות ביותר, את הנושאים האקטואליים ביותר, השתתפו במשאלי דעת קהל על אירועים אקטואליים והתקשרו לתוכנית שלנו. sbs.com.au/Hebrew.
עקבו אחרינו והפיצו אותנו דרך דף הפייסבוק שלנו.